Today is Monday, July 26th, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, U.S. ramps up attack on Taliban insurgents in Afghanistan.
The United States has increased airstrikes in the support of Afghan forces over the last several days, and we're prepared to continue this heightened level of support in the coming weeks.
Plus, make or break week for President Biden's infrastructure plan.
The effort to upgrade America's roads, bridges, and broadband networks may get a boost this week if a $1.2 trillion bipartisan infrastructure agreement advances.
Also, UN condemns use of violence by Iranian security forces on protesters. Our top story today is in Afghanistan. The United States will continue to carry out airstrikes to support Afghan forces facing attack from insurgent Taliban, U.S. Marine General Kenneth McKenzie said in Kabul on Sunday, as the U.S. and other international forces have drawn down troops in Afghanistan. The Taliban escalated its offensive in recent weeks, taking rural districts and surrounding provincial capitals, after U.S. President Joe Biden said in April, U.S. troops would be withdrawn by September, ending a 20-year-old foreign military presence. McKenzie, who leads U.S. Central Command, declined to say whether the U.S. forces would continue airstrikes after the end of their military mission on August 31st. Jason Albano of Reuters reports.
The U.S. may be withdrawing its troops from Afghanistan, but on Sunday, it said it would continue to carry out airstrikes to support Afghan forces facing attacks from the Taliban. U.S. Marine General Kenneth McKenzie spoke at a news conference in the capital, Kabul.
The United States has increased airstrikes in the support of Afghan forces over the last several days, and we're prepared to continue this heightened level of support in the coming weeks if the Taliban continue their attacks.
The Taliban has ramped up its offensive in recent weeks and gained more ground in both cities and rural districts. The UN on Monday reported that nearly 2,400 Afghan civilians were killed or injured in May and June. It's the highest for those 2 months since records started in 2009. All this comes after U.S. President Joe Biden said in April, U.S. troops will be completely withdrawn by September. That will put an end to 2 decades of foreign military presence there. McKenzie did not say whether U.S. forces would continue airstrikes after the end of their military mission on August 31st. He did, however, say that a Taliban victory was not inevitable.
It's going to be hard days ahead, but there's a path that could lead us to a political solution to this war.
Almost a year of peace talks between Afghanistan's government and the Taliban have had little effect on the war. And after a lull over a Muslim holiday this week, McKenzie said there would likely be a rise in violence.
That's Jason Albano of Reuters. Afghan lawmakers are asking the United States to continue to provide urgently needed maintenance and logistical support for their Air Force and National Armed Forces after the U.S. military completes its withdrawal in September. The White House has pledged continued support but stopped short of promising continued maintenance or drone strikes on Taliban equipment. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Amid ongoing violence in Afghanistan, including rockets landing near the presidential palace during prayers this week, the Taliban are calling for President Ashraf Ghani to step down as a condition for any negotiated political settlement. Asked about the comments Friday, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki had this to say.
First, the president and the administration supports the leadership of the Afghan people, including Ashraf Ghani. The president was scheduled to speak with him today, I believe, and I don't believe there's a readout that's come out about that call quite yet. It may while we're speaking here. I would note that there are ongoing political negotiations and discussions that we certainly support between Afghan leaders, members of the Afghan government, and the Taliban. And we believe a political solution is the only outcome to lasting peace in Afghanistan. But we will continue to provide support to the government in the form of humanitarian support, security support, training, and we will also continue to encourage them to take a leading role in defending and protecting their own people.
Earlier this week at the Pentagon, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, gave this candid assessment of Afghanistan's uncertain future.
There's a possibility of a negotiated outcome that's still out there. There's a possibility of a complete Taliban takeover or a possibility of any number of other scenarios, breakdowns, warlordism, all kinds of other scenarios that are out there. We're monitoring very closely. I don't think the end game is yet written.
In a Zoom call with U.S. journalists Friday that was not recorded, several leading members of the Afghan parliament urgently called on the United States to continue providing critical funding, logistical support, and maintenance help for their security forces and Air Force, saying one-third of their planes are grounded due to maintenance issues. They also asked for more U.S. drones to attack Taliban equipment. Afghan lawmakers said the problems would only get worse after U.S. forces depart in September. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
The United Nations says in a new report that more women and children were killed and wounded in Afghanistan in the first half of 2021 than in any year since the UN began keeping count in 2009. The report was released on Monday. It says the number of all civilians killed and wounded in violence across the country rose 47% in the first 6 months of this year compared with the same period last year. It comes as the Taliban have swiftly captured territory in recent weeks. The commander of Iraq's self-styled pro-Iranian, quote, resistance, unquote, force has threatened to mount more attacks on U.S. troops inside the country if they don't withdraw. The threat came hours after Iraqi Foreign Minister Fawad Hassan and U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken detailed the close cooperation between the two countries. A drone attack overnight against U.S. forces in Kurdistan left no casualties. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
A U.S. coalition spokesman in Iraq confirmed in a statement Saturday that a drone attack overnight on U.S. forces at the Kiara base in Iraqi Kurdistan caused no casualties. The attack came on the heels of a declaration by pro-Iranian militia commander Qaisal Khazali, who threatened to mount further attacks on U.S. forces inside Iraq until they withdraw from the country. He says that military operations against U.S. forces in Iraq will not cease until they withdraw from the country, and opposition forces will respond if the U.S. administration doesn't understand that and will retaliate if the U.S. attacks them. Arab media reported that Iran's intelligence chief visited the Iraqi capital several times during the past 10 days. VOA could not independently confirm the report. Iraqi Foreign Minister Fuad Hussein told journalists during a press conference with U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken Friday during a visit to Washington that his country needs the U.S.-backed coalition to fight terrorism. He says that Iraq needs the international coalition in many ways and is working with it under the leadership of the U.S. against Islamic State terrorists, and we need to share information between Iraq and the coalition and the U.S. to continue to fight those terrorists. Iraqi media reported that the country's national security advisor, Qasem al-Araji, told journalists on the sidelines of the meeting, however, that Baghdad does not need U.S. forces in the country any longer. Secretary of State Blinken told journalists at the meeting with Hussein Friday that both the U.S. and Iraq need each other.
We're, of course, the closest of partners in the fight against ISIS, and we can take tremendous pride in the work we've done together to defeat ISIS and to make sure that it stays defeated. But I think that the partnership between the United States and Iraq is much broader and deeper than even the common fight against ISIS.
Iraqi Prime Minister Mustafa Kazemi is scheduled to meet with U.S. President Joe Biden at the White House Monday to announce a number of agreements between the U.S. and Iraq. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Michelle Bachelet is condemning the violence Iranian security forces have used to suppress protesters angry over chronic water shortages in Khuzestan province. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Peaceful protests took place last week in several cities across Khuzestan in southwestern Iran over water shortages and mismanagement. Iranian security forces reacted by violently crushing the protests instead of addressing the long-standing water crisis. Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet is calling on the Iranian government to take urgent action to resolve the problem. She is urging that action, instead of using excessive force to stifle debate and keep the population in line. Her spokeswoman, Marta Hurtado, tells VOA the people of Khuzestan have legitimate grievances. She says the only way they can express them and have the government take notice is through protests.
The impact of the devastating water crisis on life, health and prosperity of the people of Khuzestan should be the focus of the government's attention, not the protests carried out by people driven to desperation by years of neglect. The High Commissioner said that she's extremely concerned about the deaths and injuries that have occurred over the past week, as well as the widespread arrests and detention.
At least four people, including one minor, reportedly have been killed. Monitors believe the number of killings is likely to be higher as protests have spread to at least 20 major towns and cities in Khuzestan over the past week. Further protests reportedly have broken out in support elsewhere in Iran, including in the capital Tehran and in Lorestan province. Khuzestan, a province of 5 million inhabitants, used to be the country's main and most reliable source of water. However, Hurtado says years of alleged mismanagement, including the diversion of water to other parts of the country and nationwide droughts, have depleted the region of its precious resource.
That's why the situation is defined by the High Commissioner as catastrophic, because it's not something that happened overnight. It's been building up for many years, and the authorities haven't been able to address it. That's why we call the authorities for recognition of what is happening and to address it.
High Commissioner Bachelet says it is never too late to change tack. She's calling on Iranian authorities to instruct their security forces to abide by international standards on the use of force. And then, she says, the government should take immediate steps to mitigate the water crisis and put in place long-term sustainable policies. Iranian authorities, so far, have not responded to the appeals. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The coming week could be make or break for bipartisan plan to fix America's languishing infrastructure. Michelle Quinn reports.
The effort to upgrade America's roads, bridges, and broadband networks may get a boost this week if a $1.2 trillion bipartisan infrastructure agreement advances. The Senate could vote to open debate, but details are still being worked out by a group of Republican and Democratic senators on issues that include public transit spending. Ohio Senator Rob Portman, the lead Republican negotiator of the bipartisan group, said the package represents a rare moment to show that the two political parties can compromise to get things done. He spoke to ABC this week.
So it's the right thing to do for the country, most importantly. But it's also something that has been the subject of a bipartisan consensus-finding process, which we ought to do more of in this town.
Once it is ready, the bipartisan package will face a challenge for passage. With 60 votes needed, the deal's success relies on some Republican senators joining in the evenly divided Senate. Proponents can't afford to lose a single vote, but some want the smaller bipartisan package to be tied to a separate $3.5 trillion initiative that focuses on human infrastructure. That includes child care, education, and climate change provisions. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, a Democrat, said she will bring the bipartisan infrastructure measure to the House floor only when the Senate passes that bigger package. The Senate can do that, she said, through a process known as reconciliation, a way to enact legislation on taxes, spending, and other financial measures with only a simple majority required in that chamber. She spoke on ABC this week.
The president has said that he wants to have a bipartisan bill, and we all do. But that is not the limitation of the vision of the president. He wants to build back better. He wants to do so in a way that, again, involves many more people in the prosperity of our country.
The health of America's infrastructure has long been ranked behind those of other developed nations. The dueling packages are a test for elected leaders, including President Joe Biden, a Democrat, over whether the two parties can come together to get things done. Both chambers have a short window to do so before recessing in August. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
This is the VOA. Israeli warplanes have struck a target that army says it is a Hamas military base in the southern Gaza Strip. It said early Monday that the airstrikes was in response to the launches of incendiary balloons by Gaza activists hours earlier. The balloons caused at least three blazes in southern Israel. The launches came 2 months after an 11-day war between Israel and Hamas. Tunisian troops have surrounded parliament and blocked its speaker from entering after the president suspended the legislature and fired the prime minister. The president's move followed violent nationwide protests over the country's economic troubles and the pandemic crisis. Protesters celebrated President Kais Saied's decision late Sunday night, shouting with joy, honking horns, and waving Tunisian flags. China has blamed the U.S. for what it called a, quote, stalemate, unquote, in bilateral relations as high-level face-to-face talks begin in the Chinese city of Tianjin. A state media report says China's vice foreign minister urged the U.S. to, quote, change its highly misguided mindset and dangerous policy, unquote. The official Xinhua news agency quoted Xi Wang as telling U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Wendy Sherman that the U.S.-China relationship is in a stalemate because some Americans portray China as an, quote, imagined enemy, unquote. The U.S. State Department says Sherman raised a number of issues, including what it called Beijing's anti-democratic crackdown in Hong Kong and the genocide in Xinjiang. Sherman also said the U.S. is concerned about Beijing's block on World Health Organization's effort to further investigate the origins of COVID-19, which was first identified in China in the late 2019. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu for broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Police in Australia have warned that more anti-lockdown protests won't be tolerated after thousands of people defied COVID-19 public health orders in Sydney Saturday. Health officials fear the illegal demonstrations could become a super spreader event as an outbreak of the Delta variant in Sydney gets worse. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The hunt for the ringleaders of Saturday's anti-lockdown demonstrations in Sydney is continuing. Dozens have been charged after confrontations with the police and riot officers. Some protesters brought their children and few were wearing masks. Police warn they will arrest people over unlawful activity. Health officials said the protest Saturday in three Australian cities, including Melbourne and Brisbane, would put lives at risk. Authorities have said that up to 3,500 people took part in the rally in Sydney. After the protest, New South Wales Police Commissioner Mick Fuller said any repeat of the unrest would be met with a significant show of force.
There's some information on the internet at the moment about a potential protest this Saturday. Can I just put this warning out now to everyone that we will be taking the ground very early. You will be arrested. The Premier has spoken about that behaviour and it won't be tolerated again.
About 14 million Australians are under strict lockdown restrictions in three states as cases surge in the country. But the restrictions in South Australia will end on Tuesday, and a decision on Victoria's lockdown is expected in the next 24 hours. However, there are fears that stay-at-home orders that have been in place for more than a month in Sydney and three surrounding regions will again be extended. New South Wales officials announced 145 new coronavirus cases Monday. Australia has recorded 33,000 COVID-19 infections and 918 deaths since the pandemic began. Efforts are underway to boost low rates of vaccinations. Only about 16% of Australians are fully inoculated. There has been widespread hesitancy in the community about Australia's main vaccine, AstraZeneca, after it was linked to a very small number of blood clots. However, the company that makes the AstraZeneca vaccine has denied the link, saying there's no evidence of an increased risk of blood clots in connection with the vaccine. Supplies of the Pfizer vaccine have also been limited. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
On this first World Drowning Prevention Day, the World Health Organization offers life-saving solutions to prevent most of the 236,000 estimated deaths from drowning every year. The United Nations General Assembly passed a resolution in April establishing this international day to raise awareness of drowning as a serious problem. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Summertime has been celebrated in song as the season when the living is easy. On a less celebratory note, summertime in the Northern Hemisphere also is the peak season for deaths by drowning. Over the past decade, the World Health Organization reports 2.5 million people have died in drowning incidents. It says more than half of all drowning deaths are among people under age 30, with the highest rates among children under the age of 5. David Meddings, a WHO medical officer, says drowning is the second leading cause of death among children and youth under age 19 in wealthy countries such as the United States, Switzerland, and France. He notes, though, drowning disproportionately affects the poor and the marginalized.
The rates for drowning in low and middle income countries are 3 times higher than the rates we observe in high income countries. And so it's really the populations with the least resources to be able to adapt to the threats around them that are at highest risk for drowning. The Western Pacific region has the world's highest drowning rates, followed by the African region.
WHO reports more than 90% of drowning deaths occur in rivers, lakes, wells, irrigation canals, and even domestic water storage vessels in the poorer countries. It says children and adolescents in rural areas are disproportionately affected. Medding says national surveys in Africa show most drownings occur among young adult men out on fishing vessels.
For example, there was a study done in Tanzania among lakeside communities that showed that the risk of death from drowning exceeded the risk of death in that population for death from HIV, TB, or malaria. So 80% of deaths occurring in young adult men who are, in a sense, obligated to go out on fishing vessels that often are inherently unsafe watercraft without advanced weather warning and without knowing how to swim.
The report does not include statistics on flood-related mortality. Deaths due to water transport mishaps, such as capsized ferry boats, or migrant deaths that occur while crossing the perilous Mediterranean Sea. WHO recommends a number of cost-effective, life-saving measures. It says children should be taught basic swimming and water safety skills. Wells and potentially dangerous water areas should be fenced off, and bystanders should be trained in safe rescue and resuscitation. It says safe boating and ferry regulations should be enforced and calls for flood risk management to be improved. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Tokyo Olympics have been delayed by the pandemic and then opened under oppressive heat. Now a tropical storm is on the way. It's forecast to disrupt at least some of the games. The Japanese say not to worry because in U.S. terms, the incoming weather is a mild-grade tropical storm. But archery, rowing, and sailing have already adjusted their schedules in anticipation of heavy rain. The surfers, though, are hoping a storm brings some strong waves to the competition. All this comes after several days of extreme heat that required some athletes to take longer breaks and others to douse themselves with ice. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great evening.